The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Joe Biden is now America's face to the world, feeble, isolated, undependable, incoherent. Who's facing an existential crisis? Afghanistan? No. America. And Dr. Sebastian Gorka joins me to talk about the bleak landscape of Biden's America. This is the Dinesh D'Souza podcast.
Needs this voice. The times are crazy. In a time of confusion, division, and lies, we need a brave voice of reason, understanding, and truth. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Podcast.
We have a new country in the world. Well, not a new country, but a new name for a country. The Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan. The Taliban have renamed the country. Now, Islamic is somewhat predictable. It's the word emirate that is a telling term, because if you think back to history, you had these Islamic empires, all of which aspired to be the Islamic empire stretching to the four corners of the world. You had the Ottomans in Turkey, you had the Mamluks in Egypt, you had the Safavid dynasty in Persia, now Iran, and you had, so you had five or six of these Islamic empires. And they were called caliphates or emirates. And what we have here is the Taliban essentially declaring, we are now an Islamic state. We're part of the effort to spread Islam and Islamic control throughout the world. As we all know, there's a huge stash of weapons that the United States left behind in Afghanistan. Why we did that makes absolutely no sense. Why would you leave behind? I'm not just talking about goggles and powerful rifles, and I'm talking about why would you leave behind Humvees and trucks and highly technological devices and helicopters. All of which now not only falls into the hands of the Taliban, but I'm reading here in Axios, U.S. officials are concerned that in addition to the Taliban using these weapons against civilians or for terrorism, the equipment could be seized by ISIS or end up in the hands of Russia or China. Now, all of this has been done by one Joe Biden and the kind of little coterie of Obamaites around him. And Biden clearly is clueless, or seems clueless. It's hard to believe the people around him are so clueless. I don't think they are. But Biden himself doesn't even seem to have a grasp of what's going on. Here's a little clip of Biden responding to Stephanopoulos, asking him about all the chaos. Listen.
We've all seen the pictures. We've seen those hundreds of people packed into a C-17. We've seen Afghans falling.
That was 4 days ago, 5 days ago.
Wow. That was 4 or 5 days ago. Why are you bringing it up now? I mean, this reminds me of the Babylon Bee. Serial killer mounts new defense. Yes, I killed all those people, but that was 4 or 5 days ago. I'm really surprised I'm up here on trial for it. Now, if you watch Biden of late, he's withdrawn, he's disconnected, he hasn't been talking to NATO allies, he didn't notify them in advance, he hasn't been talking to world leaders since. He's kind of in hiding. Kamala Harris, of course, is completely absentee, so we've got absent-minded and absent running the country. Wow. And if you think about Biden, here he is, you know, he's feeble, he's isolated, he's indecisive, he's incoherent. And this is the face that America is now putting forward to the world. We are sort of Biden writ large. And of course, Biden's actions in Afghanistan don't just make him look bad, but make his country look bad. Here's Biden. I'm now reading from the transcript with Stephanopoulos. Do you believe the Taliban have changed? Here's Biden.
I think they're going through sort of an existential crisis about do they want to be recognized by the international community as being a legitimate government? Wait, what? The Taliban? The victorious? The guys who just marched into Kabul? If they're having any kind of crisis, it's the crisis of disbelief that a bunch of third world tribesmen were able to defeat the strongest army in the world. They're probably like, wow, we didn't think we were so great. We're obviously much greater than we thought. That's their crisis. The real existential crisis, of course, is not over there, but over here. First of all, it begins with the pathetic communiques that are coming out. And this is, and I want to show, it's not just Biden. Here's Anthony Blinken, Secretary of State. Together with our international partners, we call on those in positions of power and authority across Afghanistan to guarantee the protection of women and girls. We call on them. We're not going to do anything about it. We're going to call on them. Maybe they'll take our call. It continues, we will monitor closely. I love that phrase, monitor closely, how any future government ensures the rights, their rights and freedoms. Now think about that phrase. What do they mean by we will monitor closely? Here's what they mean. We will assign 300 people in the State Department to read newspapers and articles and write up internal memos. So essentially of people sending memos to each other. Women's rights have taken a dark turn. This is very troubling. We need to issue a statement. Maybe someone could put out a strongly worded op-ed. So this, it's not a measure of force or strength or even conviction. It's ultimately a confession of weakness. Now, I'm thinking back to the days of the Soviet Union, where the Soviet Union, think about it, it internally collapsed. Why? Because of an existential crisis. An existential crisis because the Politburo, having held power for 70 years, and actually having supervised the development of a massive military and nuclear arsenal, suddenly looked around and said, none of this is working. All our institutions are rotted. All of them are corrupt. We don't even believe in them anymore. It's time to get out of here. And if you think about it, something like that is happening in America now. Our institutions are rotted. They aren't working the way they're supposed to. I'm not saying that the U.S. system is by itself at fault. I'm saying the people running those institutions have corrupted them, have disfigured them, have distorted. Think about the FBI. Think about the way in which even our military has been twisted from its purposes. So, you know, we keep hearing about white privilege everywhere we turn. What I'm worried about is not the end of white privilege, but the end of, I could call it American privilege. American privilege has meant something since World War II. The American passport is better than everybody else's passport. You have a preferential status by being an American. That's why everybody wants, so many people around the world want to be Americans and become Americans. But we might be seeing here in Afghanistan is the first sign of it. The beginning of the end of American privilege. And believe me, Americans aren't going to like it. Even these wokesters aren't going to like it because their woke nonsense isn't going to matter anymore. People will look at it and laugh around the world almost the way we would laugh if, let's say, New Zealand issued a communique and told us, oh, we need to change our society. We need to start using new pronouns. Really, New Zealanders? I once told Debbie, Debbie's like, you know, you should make a movie called New Zealand, Imagine a World Without Her. And I said, well, Debbie, I don't need to make that movie. That's the world we live in now. Now, the Roman Emperor Augustus, when he left power, he said, behold, I have found a Rome of clay, and I leave her to you of marble. I think with Biden, his legacy might be, I found an America that was still intact, that was still strong, that was holding its position in the world. And I pretty much destroyed it all by myself. As you know, my friend Mike Lindell has a passion to help everyone get the best sleep of your life. Now, he didn't stop by simply creating the best pillow. Mike created the new Giza Dream bed sheets. These look and feel great, which means an even better night's sleep for me, which is crucial
For my busy schedule, Mike found the world's best cotton called Giza. It's ultra soft and breathable, but also extremely durable. Mike's Giza sheets come with a 60-day money-back guarantee and a 10-year warranty. The first night you sleep on these sheets, wow, you're never going to want to sleep on anything else. The Giza Dream sheets come in a variety of sizes and colors, and Mike is making a special offer for my listeners. Sale of the year for a limited time, 50% off, as low as $49.99 on the sheets. Go to MyPillow.com and use promo code Dinesh. By the way, there you'll find not just this offer, but a deep discounts on all the MyPillow products. You got to fill your home with them like Debbie and I did. Call 800-876-0227. Again, that's 800-876-0227. Or go to MyPillow.com. In order to get the discount, you got to use promo code D-I-N-E-S-H, Dinesh. There are thousands, perhaps over 10,000, some estimate somewhere between 10 and 15,000 Americans still in Afghanistan. Think about this. Think about the scandal of this. Think about the fact that we made a pullout. Not we, Biden did. The Biden administration did. Leaving all those guys behind. And now, in a much weaker position, being out of the country with the Taliban in control, we have to figure out how to get them out. And the lackadaisical approach of Biden, by the way, contrasts with the British and the French. In fact, they can hardly believe. Normally, the Americans are the best and the first to get Americans out. The British and the French are extracting their citizens, sometimes by sending in paratroopers. They're doing everything they can. We are not doing everything we can. In fact, outrageously, the State Department was initially, they've now changed it, but they were initially going to charge Americans who boarded vehicles and were taken out of the country, charge them airfare, $2,000 each. And it was only when it was reported that they were like, oh, you know, the optics of this are not too good. We may want to not charge them after all. But not because they didn't think it was right. They thought it was right to charge them. They just didn't think it was right that it was disclosed. Now, there's a remarkable article here in the National Pulse. I want to credit the writer, Rahim Kassam. And it says that the Trump administration in the State Department had an evacuation plan, or at least an evacuation plan for civilians, a kind of specialized plan that is supervised by a team that knows how to do these extractions. Now, this is a team. It's called the Contingency and Crisis Response Team. This is a team that has a lot of experience in this area because whenever there are crises around the world, let's just say, for example, civil war breaks out in Burundi or breaks out in Somalia, but there are Americans there. How do you get them out? This is a team that specializes in doing that. They have medical personnel. They have military personnel. They're experts at this. In fact, they have done it on multiple occasions. Now, apparently, Biden and Secretary of State Antony Blinken and the State Department decided, let's terminate this program, or at least let's terminate its plan in relation to Afghanistan. We don't care about it. Apparently, the termination was signed last month in June, 2 months ago. But it was approved in February. So the reason I think here is the Biden people come in, they go, everything Trump did is wrong. And so since this was a Trump evacuation plan, let's just shelve it. And so they did. And Trump himself, by the way, issued a statement recently. I'm going to read a sentence or two. He goes, canceling the successful Trump administration program before the withdrawal that would have helped tens of thousands of Americans reach home is beyond disgraceful. Our withdrawal was conditions-based and perfect. Well, it's probably a little Trumpian exaggeration here. Nothing's perfect. But nevertheless, it would have been flawlessly executed, very Trumpian, and nobody would have even known we left. So Trump is saying, yeah, we would have done it, you know. But Trump is also saying very clearly, by the way, that I would have done it very differently than Biden did it. Biden, after all, was like, well, I'm not doing any different than Trump. He wanted to get out. I want to get out. So implying that this is the only way to get out. Now, here's the point. How many Americans are we going to leave behind in Afghanistan? Some people have compared Afghanistan to Saigon, the airlift, the kind of humiliating airlift following defeat out of that country. But in some ways, if we leave behind, let's say we have 10,000 Americans in Afghanistan. Let's say we even get, which is ambitious, 9,000 of them out. We leave 1,000 behind. 1,000 Americans. I ask you, how many live Americans were left after Vietnam, in Vietnam? Answer?
Zero. None. Every single American was gotten out. Now, of course, there was a later effort to recover bodies and so on. That's a whole different matter. I'm talking about getting Americans and American civilians out of the country. So what, in that sense, I could say that what's happened in Kabul, what's happened in Afghanistan under Biden is worse than what happened in Saigon, at least as far as the evacuation is concerned. This is something for which a lot of people have a lot of answering to do. And I think the Republicans have been too timid so far in not jumping out front, demanding hearings. I think you need to see impeachment resolutions. We need to up the ante on Biden. And by the way, the corollary benefit of this is this will not just stop Biden on his tracks in foreign policy. It will probably undermine, weaken, and make less likely the passage of many of his domestic policy initiatives as well. In their recent budget proposal, the White House Budget Office forecast inflation for 2021 at 2.1%. In June, the actual inflation rate, 5.4%. The point, inflation is here. It's coming faster than our government is prepared for, and their solution is to stick their heads in the sand. Now, don't stick your head in the sand. Hedge your savings against inflation. Diversify into gold and silver with Birch Gold Group. Now, if you haven't reached out to Birch Gold to diversify a part of your IRA or 401k into a precious metals IRA, do it today. I buy my gold from Birch Gold. They have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, countless five-star reviews, and thousands of happy customers. Talk to them. Have them help you safeguard your investments. Text Dinesh to 484848 to claim your free information kit and to speak with a precious metals expert on holding gold and silver in a tax-sheltered account. Again, text Dinesh to 484848 and protect your savings today. The Biden administration granted a very telling interview to Reuters in which Biden officials were quoted saying, you know what, we're kind of embarrassed about what's happening in Afghanistan, but we're going to try to say as little as possible about it because we don't think that the American people really care about it. In other words, as long as we can get the Americans out, Americans aren't worried about what's happening in Afghanistan. Americans are, the assumption is, narrow, provincial, insular, and so this too shall pass. Now, I interpret this interview with Reuters in a slightly more dark light than what appears on the surface. I think what the Biden administration is telegraphing through Reuters to the media is stop covering Afghanistan so much. You're kind of going overboard here. You're keeping the story going. You're on our side, remember? And so this is it's a clue to the media to get off this topic. Remember, after all, the media has been doing its best to present this in the best possible light in all kinds of ways. Of course, the classic statement, which I think Clarissa Ward has taken back somewhat. She was out there, you know, CNN reporter saying things like, yeah, you know, they're chanting debt to America back there, but, you know, it's they seem nice. Now, later she said, no, they came up to whip us and they were doing all these atrocities on the streets. So there was a little backpedaling there from Clarissa Ward. I think she deserves some credit for that. But her original statement reminded me of these sort of, it was CNN, MSN, the mostly peaceful riots. And behind you can see, you know, people being dragged out of cars, being beaten, cops being assaulted, churches burning. That's okay. It's mostly peaceful around here as far as I can see, you know. So what you have is MSNBC and CNN are now become sort of like the Taliban's voice in America. And you know, the strange thing about it is, think about it, the Taliban. I mean, the Taliban, these are people, I mean, once ISIS came up with the idea of throwing gays off buildings, it was sort of the ISIS strategy, the Taliban came up with its own counter. It's called dropping the walls on top of gays. And so you'd think that the media, which is sort of heavily populated by gays, would be like, we don't like this stuff. We would not like a wall dropped on my head. But they feel like it's in Afghanistan. I'm not in Afghanistan. You know, I'm in Milwaukee. I don't have to worry about it. So this is the media. Now, very interestingly, let's turn to social media for a minute, because very interestingly, the Taliban has an account. They're on Twitter. They're tweeting away. Now, think about it. They just not only attempted a coup, they did a coup. They didn't attempt an armed insurrection. They did an armed insurrection. So this is not democracy. They didn't count the votes. They stormed through each city. They stormed through Kabul. Now, aren't they violating Twitter guidelines?
Yes, they are.
They obviously are. But Trump is off the platform, Taliban leader tweeting away. The Washington Post, and this is really how the media ties into social media. Here's the Washington Post, because I think they realize that something's up here. Something needs explanation. So listen to their explanation. Quote, title of the article, Taliban rarely breaks social media rules with, quote, strikingly sophisticated techniques. So here's the headline. I'm not making this up, guys. It's right here. Apparently, the Taliban is abiding by the Twitter rules. You know, I guess what that means is they're using all the right pronouns. You know, Z, Zim, Zer. You know, they're apparently being advised by a social media company. And so I'm gonna give you the money quote here. I mean, this is good. Think about it. This is while the Taliban's hunting for people who supported the U.S., you know, basically killing them in the street. You have bodies lying in Kandahar and Kabul. But says the Washington Post, and of course they always quote some unnamed analysts who are essentially fake, you know, completely made up. But here we go. The answer, analysts say, to the apparent contradiction here, why is Trump off the platform but the Taliban on it? The answer, analysts say, may simply be that Trump's post for years challenged platform rules against hate speech and inciting violence. Today's Taliban, by and large, does not. This is the Washington Post with a totally straight face. So what we're dealing with here, this is just absolute dishonesty on a cosmic scale. And of course, Twitter, you know, Twitter doesn't even bother to provide explanations. You've just got this kind of robotic Jack Dorsey sitting around there, you know, basically doing his homeless seance. He's surrounded by all these, you know, clowns who are like, let's throw Trump off Twitter. You know, let's keep the Taliban on. They're after all a legitimate government that they did win. You know, they did win the war. So this is the state of our institutions, and it's a sorry state. And as we look abroad, we are more than ever convinced that the problems really lie in our most serious here at home. So, yeah, I'm not calling for America to withdraw from the world. We can't and we won't. But we need to attend to some very serious institutional and moral problems that we face, of legitimacy, of honesty, of basic decency here, right at home in the United States. Debbie and I decided to give up bread a while ago to save on carbs, and boy, did we miss it. That is until we tried this new bread from Uprising Food. We love to eat our avocado toast with Uprising bread every morning now. And Debbie found out it has the right combo of carbs and protein and tons of fiber, super important for both of our health. These Uprising guys have cracked the code on healthy bread. You simply can't find something this healthy, that tastes this good, that's this fresh. Only 2 net carbs per serving, 6 grams of protein and 9 grams of fiber. This food is insanely good for you. For me, it's all about the taste. And when I find stuff that tastes great and is good for me, hey, I'm sold. Uprising Food has absolutely nailed the taste factor on both their sourdough-esque cubes and the crunch factor on their newly launched Freedom Chips. Their food is super filling. I'm getting hungry just talking about it. Go to uprisingfood.com and use code Dinesh to get $10 off the starter bundle. They ship directly to your door. That's uprisingfood.com and use my code Dinesh to get $10 off your order. I'm really delighted to welcome to the podcast Dr. Sebastian Gorka. Seb Gorka is a political strategist. He's a media pundit. My podcast is sponsored by Salem. He's a Salem radio host. His show is called America First. And I want to mention his latest book, The War for America's Soul. Seb, what a pleasure to have you on the show. Let me begin by just talking about all this craziness that's going on in Afghanistan. And the sort of pathetic effort on the part of the Biden people to foist the blame on Trump. Their argument appears to be Trump was going to withdraw. We actually did withdraw. And so the consequences are nothing more than Trump would have gotten had he actually made the decision to withdraw. Now, can you take apart this logic, or illogic, I should say?
Absolutely. But first things first, I'm delighted to be on your show. So excited to have you as part of the Salem stable, and your podcast is superb. And God bless you for everything you've done for this nation as a fellow legal immigrant like myself. Okay, so this is hilarious. I guess the left didn't realize we had an election last November, and I guess they think that Donald Trump is still the president. Let's dissect this piece by piece. So number one, this is the deal that Trump signed with the Taliban. Therefore, we were chained to his deal. Well, that's a lie, because number one, that's not the deal we had with the Taliban. The president of the United States, my old boss, Donald Trump, would never have pulled out in the midst of the war fighting season. If you do something like that, you do it in winter, when the Khyber Pass, when Spin Baldock is snowed in, the militants stay at home, can't fight. So number one, it's a lie. There's no way we would have pulled out with the capacity to neither support the embassy or the airport, which is sheer insanity. And second, even if that had been our deal, which it wasn't, why does the Biden administration tell us, oh, and we have to abide by it? The first day in office, we have dozens of executive orders signed by this senile husk of an old man to destroy everything we built in the Trump White House. The XL Keystone pipeline gone with the stroke of a pen, 10,000 jobs gone. Or whether it is the 1776 commission actually destroyed, dismantled the day of the inauguration. Now, whether it's the sanctions we put in place on Russia to prevent the Nord Stream pipeline being built across Europe. Oh, so he could get rid of those deals, but not the imaginary deal that we had with the Taliban. It is a lie. And what we are witnessing isn't just disgusting. It is disgraceful. He's not just blaming us and my old boss. He's blaming the Afghans, and he's blaming our allies. And I was in the British Territorial Army. A fellow, a member of my same regiment, Tim Tugendhat, Colonel Tugendhat, stood up in Parliament the day before yesterday as chairman of the Foreign Affairs Committee of Parliament, our closest allies. And he called out President Biden and said, a beautiful British understatement, the end of his speech. And let me just share this. He said, to those who have never fought for the banners they stand under, I warn them not to criticize those who have. And that is a man who is a war veteran from Afghanistan and Iraq. When our closest allies call out Biden, it's just a disaster, Dinesh.
I mean, think about you have the Bagram Air Force Base, and the United States could have easily used that to bring the Americans who are in Afghanistan to the base, evacuated them first, then perhaps destroyed all the remaining Humvees and stuff that's over there, because you don't want to leave it to your enemy. I mean, it's a very old principle of warfare that you don't leave stuff behind that the bad guys can then use against you in the future, and then close the base at the end. It appears that the Biden people did things in the opposite order. They closed the base first, and then they scrambled to say, and look at their pathetic statements now, things like, we call upon the Taliban to respect women's rights. We are urging the Taliban to protect the safety of Americans. I mean, what kind of superpower behaves like this?
A superpower that sadly is being run by people who hate America and are a dangerous cocktail, Dinesh, of arrogance and ignorance. It's one of the most dangerous things. To have Ned Price, the State Department spokesperson, Jake Sullivan, this national security advisor whose only job in the past was to be Hillary Clinton's bagman at the State Department, to have these people tell the world, we don't know whether it's 11,000 or 40,000 Americans in America, in Afghanistan. We don't know how many tens of thousands of Americans are potential hostages. And then to have a nation with 12 nuclear aircraft carriers, with more special forces than most nations have soldiers, have its chief officer, Mark Milley, and the disgraceful Secretary of Defense say, we can't get everybody out. We'll do as well as we can. As the UK, Dinesh, with a far, far smaller contingent of forces, is sending their paratroopers out into the countryside to rescue not only their nationals, Dinesh, to rescue the nationals of the Republic of Ireland as well. It is an embarrassment. And one last thing from a colleague of my wife's at Heritage. Think of this. This year, next month, we'll see the 20th anniversary of September the 11th. September the 11th was masterminded from the territory of Afghanistan under the protection and succor of the Taliban, who were supporting bin Laden. Now, on the 20th anniversary of September the 11th, the Taliban will be stronger than they have ever been, will control all of Afghanistan. And Dinesh, they're going to have the weapons that you, Debbie, myself, paid for, stronger than ever. This will be the epicenter of the new global jihadi movement. And that lies on the desk of Joe Biden.
Absolutely. When we come back, I'm going to pivot a little bit with Seb Gorka to domestic affairs and talk a little bit about political prisoners in this country and the role of the media. When Debbie and I talked to Dr. Howard, the founder of Balance of Nature, he told us, hey, guys, you're going to be a long way from being healthy if you aren't eating enough fruits and veggies in your diet. He also insisted we try Balance of Nature just to see how we would feel. Now, not only do we feel like we are in our 20s, but hey, we have kids in their 20s, but we know that we are getting what we need. We take 10 daily servings of fruits and veggies, all in 6 small capsules. Check them out. Here's the fruit bottle. Here's the veggies, 3 small capsules. They're absolutely no trouble swallowing, always fresh, nothing artificial. They smell great. And Debbie swears by this. This is the fiber and spice that you can dissolve in juice or in water. She says she's never been more regular. Invest in your health. Invest in your life. Join me and experience the Balance of Nature difference for yourself for years to come. For a limited time, all new customers will receive an additional 35% discount and free shipping on your first Balance of Nature order. You got to use discount code America. Call 800-246-8751. That's 800-246-8751, or go to balanceofnature.com and use discount code America. I'm back with Dr. Sebastian Gorka. We've been talking about Afghanistan, but I want to pivot to things that are happening in this country. Seb, your parents are originally from Hungary, which was part of the Soviet bloc, even if not an entirely cooperative part of the Soviet bloc, nevertheless part of socialist tyranny. You have, as an immigrant to America, a real sense of what freedom looks like. Now, we have what seems to be an unprecedented phenomenon in this country, which is we have political prisoners. A bunch of these January 6th protesters, they haven't been convicted, most of them, of any crime. In some cases, they're not even accused of doing any violent acts at all. They were in the Capitol, waving flags, waving banners, maybe shouting. And for this, they have been imprisoned for half a year, in some cases in solitary confinement. And the Republican Party has been, I would say, for the most part, eerily silent.
Yes, it's an indictment of the establishment GOP, just as the last 7 days of the GOP doing nothing, literally nothing. They should be clamoring for our American fellow citizens to be brought home right now from Afghanistan. They should be calling for the summary termination of the Secretary of Defense, of the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, of Blinken, the Chief Diplomat, and of the National Security Advisor. So this is a personal issue for me. This is very, very disturbing. My father was a political prisoner. At the age of 20, he resisted communism, was betrayed by the British double agent Kim Philby. He was given a life sentence by the communist regime in Hungary, 2 years in solitary confinement, 2 years down a prison coal mine, eventually liberated by the brave, brave revolutionaries in 1956. And he made it out to the West with the 17-year-old daughter of a fellow prison mate. I luckily was born a free man in the UK, but to see the concept of political prisoners not be an anecdote of history or to be something we expect in Venezuela or Cuba, but to be happening here in America. Dozens of Americans in solitary confinement in federal cells in Washington, D.C., charged not with I thought this was an insurrection. None of them have been charged with insurrection or homicide. The only person who died was Ashley Babbitt, a veteran Air Force officer gunned down by a nameless officer of the Capitol Police. That's an outrage. These people, some of them are grandparents, have been charged with nothing more than trespass. Or how about this, Dinesh? The first person to actually go before a judge last month got 8 months, 8 months for interrupting an official proceedings. I don't know about you, but if I look up in Webster's dictionary, the word insurrection does not equate to interrupting an official proceedings. The idea, the freest nation in God's green earth that you, that I chose to become citizens of, today has actual political prisoners. It's just incredibly worrisome.
I mean, how, you know, in some ways it, I always cheer when I see Kevin McCarthy or GOP leaders. We stand with the people of Cuba. We stand with the people of Venezuela. But my mind immediately falls to what's happening in this country, because there's something a little hollow when you're standing with all these people in other countries and you're not moving a finger when something of the same sort is going on in this country. And then I notice that our enemies, the Chinese and so on, have actually become, in a way that we haven't seen at least before, so savvy about our politics that they're playing it against us. I mean, I had to almost chuckle when a Taliban guy was asked about free speech, and he goes, why are you talking to me about free speech? If you want to talk to some censors, go talk to the people at Facebook. And I was like, actually, the guy has sort of a point.
Well, not just the, think about this, the Taliban that wants to exist in 7th century theocratic control of their nation is talking about the media manipulation and censorship of Silicon Valley, of American citizens. It's a beautiful parallel to what happened a few months ago in Anchorage with the first Sino-US summit since the election, where our chief diplomat, this beta male, Antony Blinken, is sitting across from the table from the chief communist diplomat of China, who literally bitch slaps Antony Blinken by quoting Democrat and Black Lives Matter talking points to Blinken over the negotiating table, saying, well, you can't negotiate from a position of strength because you're a racist country. And Antony Blinken just sits there. If that had been Mike Pompeo, if that had been me or President Trump, we would have got up from the table and flamethrowered that meeting and said, end of meeting, goodbye, you commie bastards. But this guy just sat there. That's why we are where we are right now. The world is on fire. It's very simple. When I was in the White House, I had a message. You may not like Donald Trump, but Americans are safe. Our allies feel reassured. And our enemies are worried. That's as it should be. Right now, our enemies are emboldened, and our allies, they don't feel that they can trust us. Look at what's happening from the state, the Baltic states, saying they can't trust us anymore. And also, we have Americans who are unsafe, whether it's the border with the illegal invasion of aliens, or whether it is Americans, tens of thousands of whom are now hostages in Taliban-controlled Afghanistan.
Well, you know, in the old Soviet days, the Soviets would make attacks on America, but they could never, in a sense, appeal to those attacks were not based on what Americans said themselves. They were external critiques. But I think what made the Chinese attack so effective is that here is Antony Blinken. He's probably thinking, well, yeah, I am a beneficiary of white privilege. Well, yeah, I did have all these unearned benefits. Well, yeah, I am sort of a racist. So in other words, when you're using his own words, his own team's rhetoric against him, you're rendering him rhetorically and morally helpless, aren't you?
This is a point that Victor Davis Hanson, one of my regular guests on my radio show, America First, said. We've seen violence on the streets of America. We've seen un-American movements in the 1960s, the 1970s. But we've never seen the establishment be on the side of the anarchists. We've never seen the mayor of Portland. We've never seen, you know, the mayor of New York say, yeah, white supremacy is the problem, and arson and theft, that's just the redistribution of wealth. This time, they are on the side of the anarchists. They are on the side of BLM. That's the disturbing reality. These people hate America. When you have Antony, this is not a joke. If your listeners don't believe me, look it up. There's video. Antony Blinken gives a press statement where he says, the priority of the State Department, the American State Department, is to counter white nationalism around the world. We have the most senior military officer in the most powerful nation of the world, this disgrace to the U.S. Army uniform, Mark Milley, say on Capitol Hill, "I don't know what critical race theory is, but I think it's good that West Point is teaching it because I'm a white man and I want to understand white rage. How about you, stinking coward? How about you understand jihadi rage and the fact that the jihadis have now taken over our embassy in Kabul? How about that, Mark Milley, you clown?"
To which the French might say, "Touché." Good work, Seb. It was really fun. Thanks for coming on. Love to have you back. And I appreciate it.
Anytime. Check out the War for America's Soul. God bless you for what you and your bride are doing. And my website is sebgorka.com. Thank you, Dinesh.
Awesome. Thank you very much. It's time to get those towels. We've been getting them. They're coming in left and right, and we love them. They're soft. They're wonderful. They dry you completely. For a limited time, Mike Lindell is offering a ridiculously good deal on his six-piece towel set. Now, this includes 2 bath towels, 2 hand towels, and 2 washcloths made with USA cotton, soft yet absorbent. Regularly $109.99. Now $39.99. What a deal. Call 800-876-0227 or go to mypillow.com to get the discount. You got to use promo code Dinesh. The woke fever continues to spread contagiously through corporate America. In fact, it's spreading more than the Delta variant within our major corporations. Now, I don't think we see it quite as much in small businesses, but these large corporations have just kind of folded. I want to talk today about Bank of America. And hear the reporting. I've got to credit Christopher Rufo, who's done the best work on this topic. He's kind of has his ear to the ground, and he gets information from people who work for these companies. It's not that hard to do. They go to these seminars. They're like mandatory for everybody. And so all you have to do is keep all the materials and then send them over to Rufo. And Rufo usually publishes articles in the City Journal, which is a journal put out, I believe, is still owned by the Manhattan Institute. And here we go. Bank of America Corporation claims that they have a racial re-education program. This is all sounding very familiar now. Claims the United States is built on a system of white supremacy. It calls on people to, quote, decolonize their minds. There we go. Decolonize their minds. Nobody colonized them in the first place. But the woke people are trying to colonize their minds. That's what's really going on. And, quote, cede power to people of color. And what's funny here is these kinds of instructions are generally given by the white president of a bank, the white vice presidents of a bank. You need to cede power to people of color. Well, yeah, why don't you get your fat rear end out of there? Why don't you resign? Why don't you turn over your position to a person of color? Oh, no, I'm needed here to be able to advance woke principles. That's basically the woke power play here. This is how white people stay in power. Now, Bank of America, one of the regional presidents, North Carolina Charlotte, he announces this new equity initiative. It's called United in Action. It's a partnership with the United Way. Bad news right there. When you get an activist group, they start importing all these academics and all these activists. And so this is called the Racial Equity 21-Day Challenge. It's all based on critical race theory, intersectionality, white privilege, white fragility. Every nonsense phrase is essentially baked into this re-education cake. So apparently the idea here is that all whites, quote, regardless of one's socioeconomic class background and other disadvantages, are living with, quote, white skin privileges. So think of it. The basic idea here is that Oprah Winfrey and LeBron James and Jay-Z are more oppressed on the basis of color than, let's just say, a white guy working in a coal mine or a white guy who's loading on a dock or a white truck driver driving cross country. Think of the sheer deceit that's involved in making a statement like that. Even children, evidently, are said to be implicated in the system of white supremacy. Quote, white toddlers develop racial biases by age 3 to 5. I think what they mean when they say that white toddlers develop racial biases is that people begin to develop a sense of color. You begin to recognize that's yellow.
That's blue. Wait, I think I spot a racial bias. Here's a kid who actually can tell the difference between white and black. This is, think of how demented it is for adults to impose their own twisted racial ideas on 3 to 4 year olds who aren't even thinking that way. So, re-education program talks about unconscious bias, microaggressions, microaggressions. Evidently, that's an aggression that's so small that no one can hardly notice it. But it's big enough to send all of academia, all of corporate America, all of the nonprofit sector, all of entertainment, and the Democratic Party into a frenzy. Quote, reverse racism and discrimination are not possible. Evidently, it's only discrimination against minorities that counts. Discrimination against whites, against Asian Americans, that shouldn't even be recognized as a term, leave alone whether or not it's allowed to go on. It shouldn't even be recognized as a phenomenon in the first place. Now, it's one nonsensical claim after the American policing system was founded on slave patrols. Absolutely false. The American policing system derives from the English bobby system of the, well, it started with neighborhood watches, then a professional police force modeled on the British police force, later some importations of French ideas of policing. Now, true, they had slave patrols in the Democratic South. This was a weapon of the Democratic Party, but to pretend like the policing system is derived from slave patrols, just a historical falsehood. And I think what's really disgraceful here is that you've got scholars of these matters who know better, but they are maintaining a kind of respectful silence. In other words, they are accessories of these lies because they don't say anything about them. Bank of America claims to represent America. We're the Bank of America. And yet, here's a bank that has essentially betrayed core American principles, betrayed founding ideals, is trying to portray the America itself that's in its name as chronically racist and flawed. I don't know what we do as this woke contagion spreads. Do we cancel all our bank accounts? Do we get rid of our American Express cards? We do want to make our voices heard, I think, even in small ways. Every time you go into Bank of America, if you bank there, just mention to the teller, I'm really annoyed at what I've been reading about this racial re-education. Please let your supervisors know about it. I'm not happy about it, and I want you to know. That's a small step that you can take to essentially alert, as a customer, alert these banks and institutions that you're not okay with what they are doing to their own employees, but also to us. I'm beginning today, I did sort of an introduction yesterday, my discussion of Shakespeare and the problem of diversity in the series of segments, which I'm going to do sort of successively. I'm going to focus on Othello, which deals with the racial issue, black and white, or dark skin and light skinned. And I'm also going to focus on The Merchant of Venice, which focuses on Antonio and Shylock, Christian and Jew. Now, before I talk about Othello, I do want to point out that interracial or multiracial societies in history have existed, but are relatively rare. Most societies are made up of one kind of people. A classic example is India. And India, even as late as recently, when I was growing up, India was full of Indians. Most people I saw growing up looked like me. I very rarely saw a white person, and it was usually some kind of a hippie tourist. And I very rarely saw a black person. And usually when I did, it was an African that was in India for a medical purpose or some other reason. But this was by and large rare, and those were seen very much as outsiders. Now, Thomas Jefferson, viewing the landscape of America in the 18th century, thought it was going to be very difficult for blacks and whites to live together in this new country. I want to read a line from Jefferson's Notes on the State of Virginia. And he says, quote, deep-rooted prejudices entertained by the whites, 10,000 recollections by the blacks of the injuries they have sustained. New provocations, he means new provocations, white against black, black against white, race riots, white suspicions, white anger, black anger. Quote, the real distinctions which nature has made. Now, this is a little bit of a taboo right now, but Jefferson is saying, look, there are natural differences between groups. And that is true. Just as there are sex differences between men and women, there are some racial differences. And Jefferson is acknowledging that. And then he says, will divide us into parties and produce convulsions, which will probably never end but in the extermination of the one or other race. Wow. Jefferson is saying in the end, it's not going to work. One of the two groups, and he doesn't say which one. He doesn't assume that it's going to be the whites who exterminate the blacks. He thinks it's a possibility that the blacks will exterminate the whites. But either way, it's going to be, he says, a bloodbath. And before we sort of blithely dismiss it, oh, let's look around us, it's working beautifully. Well, first of all, it's not working beautifully. Second of all, it is only sustained by massive organs of propaganda and browbeating. And the question is, why is it that it's so difficult for people who come from different races, backgrounds, and maybe have different histories? For blacks and whites, it's not so much histories outside this country, but histories in this country to coexist. Now, let's turn to see if we can get some insight about this from Othello. And I'm only going to begin the discussion today by sort of introducing the play. And the play is kind of strange. You have a man, it turns out to be a dark-skinned man, Othello, who wrongly suspects his wife, Desdemona, of adultery. This suspicion is cultivated by a very diabolical and sneaky man who wants to harm both Othello and Desdemona, but mainly Othello. This is the villain Iago. But nevertheless, a man wrongly suspects his wife of cheating on him. He kills her, and he kills himself. Now, normally, if the ancient Greeks were to handle this, it would have been a comedy. Why? Because for the ancient Greeks, this is preposterous. This is, like, absurd. First of all, the evidence on which Othello acts is extremely flimsy. It's kind of a handkerchief. Othello jumps on it and thinks it is clear proof that his wife has done this, but it's not proof at all. But nevertheless, Othello's convinced it is. So for the Greeks, tragedy was the subject of myth. And tragedy was based upon things that sort of created a convulsion in society as a whole. Notice that this tragedy only creates a convulsion. It's a domestic tragedy. And for the Greeks, domestic matters were kind of small and laughable. And so, as I say, if Aristophanes had to handle this, it would have been ridiculous. You'd have Othello would be a clownish figure. He'd be constantly looking around to find his wife, you know, catch her in the act, so to speak. This is how it would go. But let's think about why it's not that way with Shakespeare. Well, the reason it's not that way with Shakespeare is because of Christianity. And what I mean by this is that Othello is jealous. Jealousy is in general seen, well, the Greeks saw it as not only a fault, but laughable. The idea that a man would be jealous for the Greeks was like, shows that this is kind of a pathetic, ridiculous figure. But in Christianity, and particularly in the Old Testament, in Judaism, think of it. The God of the Old Testament is jealous. He's a jealous God. And he's not ridiculous. So jealousy suddenly begins to take on a whole new meaning. Why? We often tend to confuse in normal language jealousy with envy. We think jealous, someone is jealous, he's envious, same thing. No, it's actually not the same thing. It's in fact the opposite. Jealousy is essentially being angry. Both are forms of anger, by the way. But jealousy is being angry because something is being taken from you that is yours. Envy is wanting, being angry because you don't have something that somebody else has that you have no right to. So if, for example, you're smarter than me and I'm envious of you, envious is the right word here, not jealous. I'm envious of you because you have something I don't. I don't have a right to be smart. I'm just not smart. But I'm upset because you have it and I don't, and that's envy. But on the other hand, and in the case of adultery, Othello has a right to the fidelity of his wife. He believes that to that degree, this is a possession that he owns. In other words, her commitment, which she gave when they got married. So that's why Othello is angry. Now, just a couple of words about Othello that are absolutely critical. We think of Othello, typically when Othello is played in America, you'll have an African-American, and it's no problem to do that, have a black actor play Othello. But Othello is in fact not, well, he's certainly not African-American, but he's actually not in that sense a Negroid at all, racially. Othello is dark-skinned but Caucasian. And this may seem like an odd thing for me to say, but Othello is a Moor. And the Moors were essentially Arabs, Muslim Arabs, who had conquered parts of Spain, had conquered parts of Europe, They've built Moorish castles all over Spain, for example. The Moors aren't Negroes. They are, in fact, Caucasians, but dark-skinned. Think of someone like Anwar Sadat, and you get a better idea of what Othello, in fact, looked like. But in the great opening scene of the play, which I'll talk about more next time, Shakespeare emphasizes the blackness of Othello. It is black Othello, contrasted with fair-skinned Desdemona. So right away, Shakespeare's introducing the stark difference between the races. And the question he's really going to ask is, how is it that this great black man, this noble black man, Othello, came to such a bad end, came to grief? And what does that say about the possibility of having blacks, people who are very different, inhabit a society that is predominantly white?
Subscribe to the Dinesh D'Souza podcast on Apple, Google, and Spotify, or watch on Rumble, YouTube, and SalemNow.com.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.